MSW Media. Please join me in thanking our new sponsor, Home Chef. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering you 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/dailybeans. And thanks to AG1 for supporting our show. If you want to take ownership over your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/dailybeans. Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. Today, the Supreme Court justices seemed skeptical of the Mifepristone case during oral arguments. The Department of Justice is investigating dozens of threats against election workers. The judge in the Manhattan DA's election interference case has issued a limited gag order after Trump went after his daughter. Jeffrey Clark's disbarment hearing has begun. Trump lawyer Mike Roman has been subpoenaed by prosecutors in Arizona. And NBC News plans to drop Ronna McDaniel after backlash from hiring her. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana, happy Wednesday. All kinds of justice-y news today.
I know, there was. Yeah, happy hump day to everybody. Getting through there.
Yep, getting through it. Later in the show today, I'm excited. I'm going to be joined by the host of Justice Matters. He's also an MSNBC legal analyst, your friend and mine, Mr. Glenn Kirshner. And we're going to discuss that limited gag order that was issued by Judge Merchan in the Manhattan DA's election interference hush money case. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion. Also, Mike Roman, the Trump lawyer, has been subpoenaed by Arizona prosecutors for his role in the coup. Now, Pete and I are going to go over this in depth on next week's Cleanup on Aisle 45 podcast. There's a new episode out today, but it didn't make it in today's episode. But today's episode is packed with everything that happened last week, so make sure to check that episode out. And Columbus, Ohio, I will see you Friday night at Natalie's Music Hall with my special guest, Olivia Troy. I'm excited for that. All right. There's so much to get to today. We just have so much news. And I first of all, I just want to give an A block shout out to our patrons because you make all of this happen. We couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much. If you're a patron, you get these shows ad free, you get them early, you get ticket sales on, pre-sale, VIP meet and greet access, all that stuff. And if you want to sign up, you can do it by going to patreon.com/MullerSheWrote. So just wanted to give a shout out to y'all because thank you for supporting independent media. The reason I wanted to bring that up is because, the Ronna McDaniel story is absolutely fantastic. And the support for independent media is crucial because of stuff like that. So anyway, we have a lot of news to get to. Let's hit the hot notes.
Hot notes.
All right, from Jeremy Barr at the Washington Post, amid a chorus of on-air protest from some of the network's biggest stars, NBC announced Tuesday night that former Republican National Committee Chair Ronna Romney McDaniel will no longer be joining the network as a paid contributor. The network had announced her hiring just last Friday, telling employees that McDaniel had been signed to a contract to provide her expert insight and analysis on American politics and the 2024 election. One NBC News executive made the case in a memo that, quote, it could be a more important moment to have a voice like, it couldn't be, excuse me, actually could is probably the right word.
Yeah.
It couldn't be a more important moment to have a voice like Ronna's on the team, unquote. But the company's on-air personalities, especially those at MSNBC, disagreed vehemently, saying McDaniel's promotion of Donald Trump's media bashing and false election fraud claims disqualifies her for a role in their news division. And one by one, they took to the airwaves to deliver that message to their bosses in front of their live audiences on Monday. Quote, take a minute. Acknowledge that maybe it wasn't the right call. That was Rachel Maddow on her show last night. I watched her whole A block. She said it's
a sign of, right?
She was so succinct. She says it's a sign of strength, not weakness, to acknowledge when you're wrong, unquote. The backlash to McDaniel's appointment was indicative of a larger struggle television networks have faced in hiring pundits to offer a pro-Trump perspective without running afoul of both the audience and their own employees. And the truth.
Yeah, and the law sometimes.
Yeah, right? NBC employees argued publicly and privately that their complaint was not with McDaniel's party affiliation, but with her actions. Quote, to be clear, we believe NBC News should seek out conservative Republican voices to provide balance in their election coverage. But it should be conservative Republicans, not a person who used her position of power to be an anti-democracy election denier. And that was Mika, I think is how you pronounce her name, on Morning Joe. I'm not up early enough to watch Morning Joe, but that's what she said. And, quote, we welcome Republican voices. This is Joy Reid, by the way. But the reality is, this isn't a difference of opinion. She literally backed an illegal scheme to steal an election in the state of Michigan, unquote. Right? Thanks, Joy Reid, for that. McDaniel appeared on Meet the Press on Sunday, where host Kristen Welker made it clear to her audience that she had no idea when they scheduled the appearance weeks earlier that Ronna would soon be her colleague, and then proceeded to grill her guest in an interview that critics praised for its aggression and rigor. I thought it could have been better, but whatevs. I didn't watch it. I only saw clips. Now, later in the show, political analyst Chuck Todd, when Chuck Todd is right, things are weird. Chuck Todd raised questions about her credibility and told Welker, I have no idea whether any answer she gave you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. Now, the backlash only picked up steam on Monday morning when the co-hosts of Morning Joe said they would not have hired her. And throughout the evening lineup, MSNBC hosts took turns bashing Ronna and the decision to hire her, which Maddow called inexplicable. By Tuesday morning, the situation was untenable. Even if McDaniel remained with the company, one of its main channels had already signaled she was not going to be welcome to appear there. MSNBC president Rashida Jones told her hosts that they don't have to book her ever. Had NBC not reversed its decision, the network almost definitely would have come under additional criticism on Tuesday night from primetime hosts Chris Hayes and Alex Wagner, who were both off on Monday nights. She lasted less than one Scaramucci, Dana. Oh, and by the way, her talent agency, which is also mine, CAA, dropped her after less than a month. So Good. Thanks, CAA, solidarity with you. And we'll keep you updated on this story as it unfolds. But man, that was blindingly fast, and it was because of everyone's voices.
I would rather give myself a self-prescribed enema than ever listen to anything that Ronna McDaniel has to say. It would be much more enjoyable.
It's the same content.
Oh, yeah, they're both full of shit. Okay, next up, the Jane Timm from Jane Timm at NBC. See, a joke went in and now I can't speak. The Department of Justice is investigating dozens of threats made to election workers, federal officials said Monday, and has charged 20 individuals so far in this case.
20?
20. Oh, quote, these are the first responders of democracy, and we will continue to investigate and prosecute those who would threaten to do them harm. That's from Gary Restaino. He's the U.S. Attorney for the District of Arizona. He said that at a press conference highlighting the recent convictions. 13 of the 20 charged individuals have been convicted. 13 of them. Of the 10 who have been sentenced already, 7 have received prison sentences of more than 18 months.
Good fuckers.
Yep. Signaling how serious federal courts are taking this conduct. That's what John Keller, a DOJ official who leads day-to-day operations at the agency's Election Threats Task Force.
God, it's so weird that we are only now hearing about this because deterrence is key.
Absolutely.
But if nobody knows that
people are getting in trouble for this shit,
are serving 18 months in prison, 13 of 20 so far have been convicted. Like, I'm glad that they finally wrote this story, but Jesus, where has this news been?
It's a really great question. Two of the convicted individuals were sentenced in March for making threats against former Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, as we know, an amazing Democrat who's now the state's governor.
Woohoo.
Yep. Joshua Russell, an Ohio man, he was sentenced Monday to 2.5 years in prison for leaving threatening voicemails with Hobbs's office. According to federal authorities, Russell said in a 2022 voicemail to Hobbs that, quote, you have a very short months to see yourself behind bars, or we will see you to the grave. You're a traitor to this nation, and you will suffer the expletive consequences. James Clark, a Massachusetts man, was convicted for making bomb threats against Hobbs in 2021 that triggered a partial evacuation. Clark later conducted online searches about the Boston Marathon bombing. That's what Rossano said. He was researching basically how to do this, apparently. Jesus. He was sentenced earlier this month to 42 months in prison.
Good.
Yeah. Most threats reviewed by the FBI are not criminally actionable. That's from officials. That's what they said on Monday, though they noted that every single reported communication is reviewed. To reach the level of a crime, Restaino said, a communication must include, quote, serious expression that a speaker means to commit an act of violence. So several of those reached that threshold, and I have a feeling others of these, eight people that have not, or seven people that have not been sentenced, it's gonna happen.
They will. And yeah, I hope that people keep reporting on this. Next up, from Kyle Cheney at Politico, Jeffrey Clark, former Justice Department official who worked closely with Donald Trump to overturn the 2020 election, should face professional consequences, including the potential loss of his license to practice law for his effort to throw the nation into chaos. That's what from a DC bar disciplinary authority arguing on Tuesday. His disbarment hearings are underway. Okay. And this is the guy who, you know, call us when there's an oil spill. That's this guy. A lawyer for Clark said it would be unreasonable to punish him for his work during the tumultuous days ahead of January 6th, when he spearheaded a proposal to encourage state legislatures to consider overturning their results. That plan was never adopted, and Trump ultimately turned it down. Punishing Clark for being on the losing side of a policy dispute would set a dangerous precedent. That's Clark's team, okay? And so I got some thoughts. The losing side of a policy dispute was a fucking coup. Jesus. Alternate realities were on display Tuesday as the bar investigators began laying out their case to penalize Clark for his role in Trump's scheme to remain in power. Investigators charged Clark with violating professional rules of conduct in late 2020 by attempting to coerce his bosses to send a letter to Georgia, encouraging them to reconsider the outcome of the election based on, quote, significant concerns about, quote, the integrity of the vote that didn't fucking exist. I'm adding my own color to this article in case you haven't noticed. Hamilton Fox, the lead investigator for the DC Bar's Office of Disciplinary Counsel, said Clark's efforts amounted to a coup attempt within the Department of Justice aimed at taking out the sitting leadership in order to effectuate a plan that would have thrown the 2020 election into even further disarray. Clark, he held unauthorized talks with Donald Trump, violating DOJ policies against White House contact, and then sought to outflank then-acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen and his deputy Richard Donahue by telling them he planned to accept an offer from Trump to take over the DOJ unless they agreed to send his letter to Georgia. The showdown, which has been well documented by the January 6th Select Committee and prosecutors in Georgia, led to an Oval Office confrontation on January 3rd, 3 days before the insurrection, in which Trump ultimately backed down from his plans to elevate Clark amid a mass resignation threat by top DOJ and White House officials. Remember when Hirschman said, you'll be presiding over a graveyard. Clark has been criminally charged by Georgia prosecutors for his role in Trump's efforts to overturn the election, and he's identified as an unindicted co-conspirator, unindicted so far, in Special Counsel Jack Smith's Washington, D.C. case against Trump. And in case everybody's wondering why the rest of these guys haven't been indicted, I think it's because Jack Smith wants to do Trump alone, prosecute him alone in his trial by himself, then indict his unindicted co-conspirators. Because if he indicts them now, they will file for consolidation with Trump's case and sort of latch on to it. And weigh it down and delay it well into next year with all their pretrial motions and their immunity motions and their motion, you know, all their bullshit. So that's why I think, by the way, that they haven't been indicted yet. I will say this, and I've talked about this on the Jack podcast, Dana. If Trump somehow pulls off a win and has not yet gone to trial for January 6th, if he wins, I think you'll find in those 2 months, you know, between the election and the inauguration, I think Jack Smith will put out the rest of those indictments and a full report.
I think so too. God forbid, but yes.
Yeah, I know, right? Ugh, I shudder to think. Donahue was the first witness on Tuesday describing his work to review claims of election fraud and finding many of the fraud claims lodged by Trump and his allies to be bullshit. Politico says meritless. He also describes the conversations with Trump, recalling that Trump urged Rosen to simply declare the election corrupt and let him and his Republican pals in Congress do the rest. Remember that note? Donahue recalled trying to educate Trump about the DOJ's limited role in elections and its work debunking many of these false allegations of fraud that had been circulating, but he didn't listen. Disciplinary proceedings against the lawyers who formed the backbone of Trump's effort have aired significant new details about the 2 months that have threatened the peaceful transfer of power in 2020 and 2021. Eastman is expected to face a disbarment ruling by today when a California judge issues her proposed punishment for alleged violations of professional conduct. I'm going to put some beans on him being disbarred as fuck. Rudy Giuliani has similarly had his law license suspended in New York and D.C., and he's had disbarment hearings. We're still waiting for a ruling on disbarment. That could come at any time. Other attorneys involved in failed legal efforts to overturn the election results in 2020 have also faced disciplinary charges, some of which are still pending. Clark's attorney says he intends to argue, using witnesses from Georgia and statistical experts that Trump has relied on in the past, which, you know, if Trump's legal battles of the past or any indication will not help, that his concerns about election fraud were well-founded and that DOJ officials rebuffed them. And the entire dispute amounts to an internal disagreement about what DOJ's official position should have been. It's just a policy disagreement. There's nothing dishonest and nothing in violation of the rules of professional conduct.
It's just a flesh wound.
It's just a... Your arm's off.
It's just a flesh wound.
Just a butter scratch. Professional conduct about proposing a change in position. That's what Clark's lawyer, Harry McDougald, argued. Mr. Clark did nothing wrong. Okay. Now, Clark is unlikely to testify. That would be a bad idea. And Fox intends to rely on testimony from White House and Department of Justice officials, including Donahue, Rosen, and one of the Pats, Pat Philbin. Clark's lawyers said he intends to call former Attorney General Edwin Meese. I mean, this guy is fucking everywhere, writing up amicus briefs as to why Clark shouldn't be part of this and why Donald Trump is innocent. Ed Meese is a, look him up, Google him. You'll see what I'm talking about. And he wants to call a member of the Atlanta Area Election Board who opposed certifying the results. Pete and I are going to go over Philbin's testimony in detail on next week's cleanup on All 45. So this should be fun.
Thanks so much, AG. This one's from Pam Bellick at The Times. A majority of the Supreme Court seemed inclined on Tuesday to reject a bid to sharply limit access to abortion pills. During about 90 minutes of argument, most of the justices seemed doubtful that the plaintiffs, who do not prescribe abortion pills or regularly treat abortion patients, even had standing to bring the challenge. The justices, including several in the conservative majority, they questioned whether the plaintiffs could show that they faced the moral harm that they claim to suffer from the availability of the pill, mifepristone. The case centers on whether changes the Food and Drug Administration made in 2016 and 2021, which broadened access to the drug, would have to be rolled back. Those changes made it possible for patients to obtain prescriptions of mifepristone by telemedicine and receive abortion pills in the mail, which has greatly increased the availability of medication abortion, which is incredibly safe, by the way, this drug specifically. Several justices questioned the remedy that the plaintiffs seek, which is to apply nationwide restrictions to the drug in case that would have very broad implications because it would be the first time a court had second-guessed the FDA's regulatory authority. Quote, this case seems like a prime example of turning what could be a small lawsuit into a nationwide legislative assembly on an FDA rule or any other federal government action. That's from Justice Neil Gorsuch. I always do that. Sorry about that. And as we know, he was an appointee of one of the seats that Donald J. Trump stole. Just my input. Now, to have standing, plaintiffs must show they face concrete harm from the policy or action that they are challenging in court. In this case, the plaintiffs, which are a group of anti-abortion doctors and organizations, say they face moral harm because patients who take abortion pills might seek treatment afterward at emergency departments and hospitals where some of those doctors work. Again, a theoretical situation.
Yeah. There's no standing if there's no harm. You can't have standing if you might be harmed in the future. It's ridiculous.
Solicitor General Elizabeth Preligar argued for the government, said the plaintiffs did not, quote, come within 100 miles of the kinds of circumstances this court has previously identified as grounds for standing. She cited the fact that the doctors do not prescribe abortion pills. They are not forced to treat women who take abortion pills. More crucially, she pointed to the fact that because serious complications from abortion pills are very rare, those doctors would not often encounter a woman who had experienced a serious complication requiring them to provide treatment. The plaintiff's lawyer, Erin Hawley, if that name sounds familiar to anyone, that is Josh Hawley's fucking wife, everybody. Mm-hmm. She is the devil. We don't know. We know Josh. She's the dangerous one. Trust me. She countered by saying the doctors had treated abortion pill patients in emergency departments. She cited the written declarations in the case of Dr. Christina Francis and Dr. Ingrid Scope. Maybe Scope. I think Dr. Ingrid Scope. Let's go with that. Justice Amy Coney Barrett questioned whether those doctors had provided examples of, quote, actually participating in the abortion to end the life of the embryo or fetus. And she added, I don't read either Scope or Francis to say that they ever participated in that. If Amy Coney Barrett is questioning right. you on this, you've clearly lost the plot.
Your Erin Hawley is to the right of Amy Coney Barrett on abortion. I mean, shit.
Yeah, the justices also questioned whether the anti-abortion organizations in the case even have standing. Those organizations contend that they experience harm because in order to challenge the abortion pill, they've had to divert resources from other advocacy efforts.
Oh.
No, you fucking haven't.
What? So they're harmed because they have to pay to hate things?
Yeah. Guess who was skeptical of this point? I mean, just try and guess.
Alito.
No, Clarence Thomas.
Oh, same thing. Same thing.
That's fair. Clarence Thomas seems skeptical of that claim, saying that
having to
prioritize how an organization spends its time and money would apply to, quote, anyone who is aggressive or vigilant about bringing lawsuits. Just simply by using resources to advocate their position in court, you say now causes an injury. That seems easy to manufacture.
Huh. Oh, man.
Yep. Dude. If you've lost Clarence Thomas, again, you've lost the plot. Lawyers for the government and for a manufacturer of mifepristone, that's Danko Laboratories, said that if the anti-abortion doctors did encounter an abortion patient, they could easily invoke conscience protections and pass the case to another doctor who did not have moral objections to this bullshit case. The plaintiffs are, quote, individuals who do not use this product, do not prescribe this product, and have a conscience right not to treat anyone who has taken this product. That's from Jessica Ellsworth, also a lawyer representing Danko. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said there was, quote, a mismatch between what the anti-abortion doctors are claiming that they have experienced and the remedy they are seeking, quote, the obvious common sense remedy would be to provide them with an exemption that they don't have to participate in this procedure. Noting that such a remedy already exists in the form of a conscience protections, she said, this is again Ketanji Brown Jackson, I guess then what they're asking for in this lawsuit is more than that. They're saying, quote, because we object to having to be forced to participate in this procedure, we're seeking an order preventing anyone from having access to these drugs at all. Justice Barrett asked the plaintiffs their claim that the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, EMTALA, E-M-T-A-L-A, which requires emergency departments and hospitals to treat patients with urgent medical issues, would override doctors' conscience objections and force them to treat patients who have taken abortion pills anyway. Ms. Prelogar said that would not happen because EMTALA applies to hospitals, not individual doctors. So doctors with moral objections, they could opt out. The other thing that they're saying is that sending this through the mail, the plaintiffs are is the Comstock Act, which is a billion years old. Also, if they said that this was somehow, what kind of material did they call it?
Obscene material.
That means any drug sent through the mail could fall on. It's absurd. They're not going to win on that either. But it's nice to see, and I'm sort of shocked, that most of the justices, even three of the conservative justices, think that this case has no standing and that they're kind of full of shit.
Yeah, I think that this will go down on standing, which will leave them open to a better case for the, you know, pro-life, which is a bad term, I guess, anti-choice sect of the Supreme Court, to take a case later to try to ban this drug. I don't think that these doctors have standing, though, in this particular case. But we'll see, and we'll let you know. I thought Prelogar did an incredible job today, so I'm very proud of her. All right, we'll be back with the good news. But first, I will talk with Justice Matters host Glenn Kirshner about the limited gag order issued in the election interference case. So stick around. We'll be right back. After these messages, we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Before AG1, my mornings were all about trying and failing to kickstart my day. I was very sluggish. Coffee wasn't even helping me wake up. Combined with my near constant digestion issues, my days always started off on the wrong foot. All of that changed when I started taking AG1 a few years ago. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. And it makes me feel energized and ready to tackle anything that comes next. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. AG1 really knocks it out of the park as a nutritional supplement. It replaces a cabinet full of supplements that I used to have to take every day. It's so simple. That's what makes it such an easy habit to pick up. For me, AG1 is a total must-have for my daily grind. Just one delicious scoop in some extra cold water, and then one quick shake, and I'm good to go. It's like my secret weapon for making sure I'm hitting all my nutritional bases, especially postmenopausal. It's very difficult for me to get all my nutrients. It keeps my brain sharp, keeps my gut happy, my immune system is tough. Kicking off my mornings with AG1 is my way of making sure I'm all set for whatever the day throws at me, keeping me feeling fit, focused, and full of life. Now, if there's one product I have to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership over your health, start with AG1 today. Try AG1, get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/dailybeans. That's drinkag1.com/dailybeans. Check it out. And if you've been tuning in for a while, you know I'm all about meal kits. They are a lifesaver. They give me back those precious hours of prepping and cooking so I can dive into my work and keep up with the news. Now, what got me hooked to Home Chef was the promise of ditching those endless prep and cook times for someone who's always buzzing around, not exactly a gourmet chef of my own. I kind of burn jello, but Home Chef meals are just the ticket and they're amazing. I get to eat well without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. You can get 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life. That's at homechef.com/dailybeans. Home Chef is easy, convenient, economical. It saves me time. It saves the average customer $86 a month on groceries with 30 options a week, serving a wide variety of dietary needs too. Home Chef takes the stress and worry out of meal planning while also having to make time for the grocery store every week. Thing of the past. They have oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, classic meal kits with the pre-portioned ingredients, easy instructions, as well as speedy recipes that are ready in less than a half an hour, and they're all delicious. Home Chef has your entire family covered for delicious meals without hassle. Yesterday, barbecue mushroom flatbread. It was the first time I've had it. It's amazing. It pairs earthy, cremini mushrooms with sweet barbecue sauce and soft naan bread, melted cheddar jack crisp shallots, creamy buttermilk ranch dressing. All the flavors are there. It's got great texture. It looks beautiful. And it was amazing. I'm going to have it like every night for the next 6 nights. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering the Daily Beans listeners 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free desserts for life at homechef.com/dailybeans. That's homechef.com/dailybeans for 18 free meals and free desserts for life. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Happy to be joined today by my friend, host of Justice Matters and MSNBC legal analyst, my friend Glenn Kirshner. Glenn, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, AG?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much. I wanted to talk to you today because we have another gag order. And every time we get a gag order, I like to talk to you because it seems as though every time we get a gag order, a partial gag order, or a narrowly tailored gag order, Trump finds his way to weasel around it or they're not enforced. So let's talk about what case this gag order is for and what kicked it off.
So this is actually the first case that looks like it has the prospect of going to trial, the first criminal case. This is the New York election interference case from when Donald Trump interfered in the 2016 presidential election. You see a pattern emerging here with Donald Trump interfering in presidential elections. People like to call this the hush money case, and it involves hush money payments to porn stars and playmates. And then they violated New York state law by falsifying business records to cover up the hush money payments. What was the motivation for it all? To interfere in the 2016 presidential election, to hide deeply damaging information from the American voters, in a very real sense, to rob us of the full value of our vote. And Judge Juan Merchan, the presiding judge, you know, I used to say about Judge Tanya Chutkan, she don't play. It's becoming increasingly clear that Judge Merchan don't play either, because he has set a firm trial date now after a couple of bumps on the procedural road. He set a firm trial date for April 15th. So if everything goes as planned, gauging the strength and the quality of the evidence that we've seen publicly reported, Donald Trump could be a convicted felon as early as May.
Yeah. And this gag order, we'll talk about that. But, you know, there were a couple of motions in limine that Judge Merchan, who, like you said, seems to be no nonsense, decided late last week, including the whole argument that this is election interference. Trump wanted to keep that out. He wanted to keep the phrase catch and kill out of the mouths of prosecutors. That didn't work. All that was denied. And they, you know, aren't allowed to bring in the Access Hollywood tape, but they can, prosecutors can describe it as it pertains to motive and election interference, which is the main thing. I always call this the election interference case and not the hush money case, or I say the election interference hush money case so people know what I'm talking about. But I think it's very important that, like you said, that is what underpins this entire case. And Donald Trump has been out there, including on the courthouse steps on Monday after a hearing, going after the prosecutors, going at saying that Joe Biden's involved, talking about all the sorts of, you know, prosecutors and election interference and not fair, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that going after Judge Merchan's daughter in a post on Truth Social kicked off this gag order. And so let's talk about what this gag order basically limits.
Yeah, so it limits Donald Trump's ability to make statements or cause others to make statements about witnesses, about jurors, about court staff and their family, about prosecutors and their family members. However, he can still rail against District Attorney Alvin Bragg as kind of the figurehead of what Donald Trump would claim is a witch hunt or political interference. And you'll have to help me, AG. I don't know that Judge Merchan included himself in the gag order. I don't believe he did. I just took a quick look at the four-page gag order, part of which is stuck in my printer over there, which is driving me crazy. So not unlike other gag orders that have been imposed. The judges leave Donald Trump free to rail against the judge, to rail against the lead prosecutor, but not against staff, against family members. And here's what, let me tell you what I have a little bit of heartburn with. We all saw that Donald Trump posted something about Judge Merchan's daughter, where she works, what she does. Instantly, we've got a gag order issued by Judge Merchan. Do I begrudge him wanting to protect his daughter and his family? Of course not. But think back to the New York civil fraud trial, when Judge Engoron saw that Donald Trump had criticized, had named, had posted something about his, Judge Engoron's clerk. Instantly, we got a gag order. Here's my complaint about that. Why does it take somebody who's very close to or perhaps related to the judge to inspire the judges to issue these gag orders and try to protect their clerk or their daughter? Shouldn't we be protecting all of the witnesses, all of the jurors, all of the family members of all of the participants in the case? So I think that is, frankly, the judiciary kind of exposing itself as being, you know, appropriately concerned when somebody close to them on their staff or a family member gets threatened, and then they jump into action. It would be nice if the criminal justice system writ large took just as seriously threats against all of the participants in the case.
Yeah. And I think my other little bit of heartburn with this is how long before he violates it, and will there actually be action on any violation of this? Now, granted, in the verbiage of all of these, I think, narrowly tailored gag orders, it says it has to materially try to interfere with with the case itself. And there's a lot that leaves a lot of kind of gray area for interpretation by the judges. And so we've never really seen, I mean, we came close with Fonnie Willis, who had filed against Floyd, right? Harrison Floyd, when he went to attack one of the witnesses in that case. And the judge didn't put him in jail or anything, but modified his bail conditions and was a little more, I guess, clear about what is and what isn't allowed. So we haven't really, we've seen these gag orders, but we haven't really seen any action with regard to the gag orders. We just had Donald Trump posting about Cassidy Hutchinson specifically, who is a potential government witness in the DC case. And even though that case is stayed right now pending immunity, the bail conditions and the narrowly tailored gag order that are in effect are not stayed. And you know, Judge Chutkan made a very big point about those not being stayed, and that she still has jurisdiction over those things. But we didn't see any reaction. We didn't see a filing by the government. And so he's still out and about making these statements.
And when you see obvious violations of gag orders, as the one you just mentioned, Cassidy Hutchinson, a witness in the D.C. federal prosecution for his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election, and you see that the criminal justice system and the prosecutors receive it with a shrug and they do nothing about it, what does that do? It encourages, it emboldens, in a very real sense, it gives permission to the wrongdoer to keep it up and to ratchet it up. So why in the world we didn't see a show cause order filed by Jack Smith asking Judge Chutkan to take this up, regardless of the outcome? These things need to be pursued in court. I'm not going to get started on motions to recuse. And so, mind you, I was involved in hundreds of show cause hearings in my 30 years as a prosecutor. A show cause hearing is simply when it looks like a defendant might have violated, for example, a condition of release, pretrial release, a condition of probation. You file something with the court saying, Judge, we've got some evidence here that a defendant violated a court order. We would like you to conduct the hearing and see if it actually constitutes a violation. And if so, what should the sanction be? Jack Smith can file that, but he hasn't. Judge Chutkan, a judge can sua sponte on their own, take that up and order the parties to come in and show cause. You know how many show cause orders I received in my box when I was a federal prosecutor from the judge saying we got wind through, for example, the probation office that there is a potential violation? Why is none of that being done, AG? You know, I just wrote a piece for MSNBC that tries to answer the question. Why does it seem like the Department of Justice and other institutions of government are intent on applying the rules, the laws, and the Constitution differently to Donald Trump than they would apply them to you or me? I don't think I have a perfect answer, but I take a stab at it.
Yeah, and it brings me to, you know, if it were us, it would be a different story. I keep thinking about the reduction of the New York Attorney General civil fraud trial disgorgement judgment bond from $464 million to $175 million. And $175 million is still a lot of money, but it's a lot less money for someone like Donald Trump, especially who's been out on the trail saying, I have $500 million that I was going to spend on my election, and now I can't. And then we come back and we hear from an appellate court putting a stay on their revocation of business licenses, their ability to take out loans, everything but the financial Monger. Babysitter, Barbara Jones. I'm just used to her being a special master, you know, everything but that. And then reducing that bond amount. What other company, and the AG even filed, there are tons of examples of huge, you know, disgorgement bonds that have been filed with this court. What's going on? And again, it's that two-tiered system of justice we keep seeing.
So generally, appellate courts generally don't engage in fraud reduction programs or fraud forgiveness programs, but that's what the appellate court did. And again, what gives me so much heartburn is the order. Nothing. Didn't cite a single case of authority in support of their proposition for doing this. Not a single fact. Why did they do this? It's inexplicable. And I think it does a disservice to the system to just say, oh, Donald, you want your bond reduced? Done. With no explanation, no analysis. That does real violence, figuratively speaking, to the confidence that we want to have in judicial decisions, particularly appellate court decisions this dramatic. But we are all left scratching our heads, particularly, as you mentioned, days after Donald Trump said, not to worry, folks, I have $500 million in cash. And the court responds by saying, we don't want to financially tap you out. We're going to drop it down to 175. I don't know. Again, this reinforces that the laws, the rules, and the Constitution apply differently. And we go right back to the election interference, hush money, falsifying business records case. Michael Cohen, as you know, AG, and I'm going to try to do this quickly and without my blood pressure spiking. Michael Cohen was Donald Trump's co-conspirator, de facto co-conspirator in the hush money payment scheme, the criminal scheme. Michael Cohen did it obviously and credibly, he has claimed, at the direction of and for the benefit of Donald Trump. And the Department of Justice went hard after Michael Cohen. They convicted him. They imprisoned him. When he was out after serving his part of his sentence and he was put on release, he said he was going to write a book criticizing Dear Leader. And they put him back in prison in violation of his constitutional rights, as a New York federal judge found when he granted the great writ of habeas corpus, release the prisoner, bring his body here because the government is unconstitutionally confining him. And AG, notwithstanding the fact that Donald Trump was the bigger criminal fish in that scheme, DOJ didn't touch him. Why? Why? I mean, these are things that you can stack one up after another after another. And the only conclusion you can reach is that the rules, the laws, and the Constitution apply differently to Donald Trump than to others. But again, I wish someone would explain why it has to be that way.
Yeah, the only thing they touched was Bill Barr trying to remove individual one's name from that indictment over and over and over again. And then, of course, we had the, you know, going after Lev Parnas, but not Rudy Giuliani in the Ukraine debacle. It goes on and on. And, you know, Glenn, I'm all for a merciful court to people who deserve mercy.
Yeah.
To the guy who can't make $1,000 bail. But not the billionaire who says he has all the money to pay the bond and then having that bond reduced. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I wish that we treated every single criminal defendant in this country the same way we treat Donald Trump. That should be the goal, to lift everybody up to that level.
Well, then the streets would be running with blood because all the criminals would be out if we treated everyone the way we treat Donald Trump. You know, you need to hold people accountable for their crimes, and you need to vindicate the rights of victims, and you need to protect society. But you need to do it fairly and equally,
yeah.
You know, with respect to everybody, not just the powerful, the influential, the connected, the political, the wealthy, the white, the male, but those are the people who seem to get all the perks and all the breaks.
That's very true. My friend, it's been great talking to you. I could talk to you for another hour easily, but we do have to get to the good news. I appreciate you coming on. Everybody needs to check out Justice Matters wherever you get your pods and the YouTube channel. Also, you can check him out, legal analyst on MSNBC, and check out the piece that Glenn just wrote for MSNBC as well. I appreciate you coming on, and we're going to see you in April at our MSW media gathering for patrons. I appreciate you making an appearance there, my friend. Glenn Kirshner, it's been great to see you.
Great seeing you, AG.
Everybody stick around. We'll be right back with the good news. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news?
Near. Good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play what the mutt, find the cat, opine on the bovine, what the hell is in that shell, what's the model of your axolotl, what the heck, what, anything you want to play, send us a photo of an animal. We'll guess the animal or the color. That was really funny yesterday when someone's like, I bet you can guess the colors of my cats.
I know. And then we got 2 out of 3.
Yeah, we still screwed it up. And if you have self shout outs to a loved one, small business, if you have a story about student debt relief, or great health care you've received under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or at the VA. We'd love to hear about that. Any Democratic program that's really helped your family, I'd love to share that with the White House on your behalf. Also, what do we do? What else do we have? Oh, thesis titles, dissertation titles, if you have baby pictures, frog orgies, whoopee stories, anything at all.
Love letters to myself and Allison Gill. Whatever it is, we'll take it.
Yes. Yes, love letters to us, especially. Send them in to us, dailybeanspod.com, and click on contact. All right, let's see what we have up here first. We have pronunciation correction from Atheist Eagle Scout. Oh, Atheist Eagle Scout, it's been a minute since we've heard from he/him. Fabulous ladies of Leguminati, it's me again. A slight correction, AG, your Ohio accent is coming through. You mispronounced Olathe, Kansas, just like your Cleveland CEO. The pronunciation isn't Olaf. Like is not Olaf like laugh. It's rather Olathe. Olathe.
I'm so glad I didn't get the submission.
Oh, thanks for everything you do. I just said Olathe. I was closer on my second mispronunciation of Olathe, Kansas. Thanks for everything you do, Dana, and the listeners too. For Pod Pet Tax, my beloved Moose. Moose. Aww. The best thing about lockdown was to spend the last year with him every day. Oh, Moose.
Oh, sweet.
Thank you for that. Oh, pronunciation correction from Dana, pronouns he and him, Susquehanna.
Susquehanna. I wonder what I said.
I thought I said Susquehanna.
No, but you probably did. I must have said something bizarre.
Maybe I said Susquehanna instead of Susquehanna.
Oh, this is from Dana, not for Dana. See, I can't even read. Maybe I didn't say anything wrong.
Yeah, I don't think you had a Susquehanna story.
Oh my God, moving on. Okay, great. Yeah, AG, get your shit together. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm telling you, people, come to the live shows because this is what you have in store for you.
Oh, fuck.
All right, this one's from Anonymous, pronouns she and her. Hello, my morning friends. Hi, Anonymous. Thank you. I learned about the PACT Act from a friend, and after my husband's death, I qualified. He had never qualified in the past for Agent Orange exposure, but his death finally made him, me, as his widow, eligible for disabled vet benefits. I'm hoping you can spread the word to your listeners that the PACT Act opened up eligibility to many more vets. The VA cannot reach out to you. You must research yourself. Thank you for signing the act, Joe. That is our president. For Pet Tax, here's a pic of my big girl, Jackie, with her cousin, Indy, at our Minnesota cabin. Indy chose Jackie's bed, so Jackie had no choice but to use the small bed. By the way, Indy's gotcha 1-year anniversary is April 4th. She was named Indy since it was the first indictment week. Oh. Now my sister calls her Indy.
Oh my gosh, look at this.
This picture is fantastic. Oh, this is also a What the Mutt. I'm not sure for which one, though.
Oh, well, the little one looks like a Pekingese Maltese.
A Lhasa Apso.
Shih Tzu Lhasa Apso.
Yeah.
The other one looks like a German Shepherd Golden Retriever
lab mix. All right, let's see what we got.
Golden Shepherd, which is a Golden Retriever and White Shepherd. Okay.
All right, close. And India is a Shih Tzu. Okay.
Pure Shih Tzu. Oh, I'm so sorry. But a purebred Shih Tzu and adorable at that. Thank you for that, Anonymous. Appreciate you. Next up, another pronunciation correction. Yay. Hey, Beans. Derek Beeb, again, with a correction out of affection. My name is pronounced BB, like BB-8. Okay. It's okay. Every single person gets it wrong. And while my cover is not based on AG, the cover is a woman leading a democratic revolution in the name of gender and class equality. Excellent.
Nice.
So this is, again, the Derek Beebe book, The Secret Apprentice, available now on Amazon. Thank you so much. Now I know, Beebe.
Okay. And this person is very clear. It says, I'll stay anonymous. No pronouns given. Very fine Beans ladies. My spouse recently had a $27,000 in student loans forgiven under the Public Service Student Loan Forgiveness Program. My spouse has been teaching for over 22 years now, and his loan forgiveness means so much. I've been working during the same time period in the private sector with less education and an equal type of work, and yet her public sector pay for teaching is about half what mine is. 1 year of the salary difference would be more than loan forgiveness. In any case, we are thrilled that President Biden has put loan forgiveness front and center. For pet tax, we have pet allergies. So I'm sending a pic of my daughter's adorable little Yorkie and her husky. Watching these two tussle is amazing. Even if a little nerve-wracking, the little guy is the size of the big guy's head. I can imagine watching these two fight would definitely be like, oh God, the dog's going to eat the other dog.
Look at the face that Yorkie.
So both of them. Look at the other face of the other dog. Look like, oh, I didn't do anything. It's not my fault. I'm eight times bigger than that dog.
Huskies are so funny. They're just such clowns. Thank you for sending that in. And $27,000, that has to make such a huge difference. Oh, thank you, Anonymous. All right, next up from Anonymous, she and her. Hi, ladies of the bean. On Monday's show, you had a writer talk about their experience of being a lifelong Republican turned Democrat and guessed there were more out there. I wanted to share my mother-in-law's story. She was born and raised in deep red Utah, was a lifelong Republican. My husband and I are raging liberals. Over the years, we've always had a very open and honest discussion with my mother-in-law about what we believe politically and why. She slowly came around to questioning her news sources and thinking critically about issues that are important to her. In 2016, after the Pussy recording was released, my mother-in-law called us up and let us know for the first time in her life she was voting blue for Hillary because she couldn't support someone who treated women that way. In the years since, she's become more and more Democratic. She was an enthusiastic Biden voter in 2020. She likes Romney, but since he's not running again, she told me there's no Republican she can possibly vote for. She didn't understand how all of her friends and family can't see through the nonsense that the Republican Party has become. I know it's only one vote in my world, but open and honest discussions with people on the fence can really make a difference. As Pod Pet Tax, I submit my grumpy 15-year-old kitty, Thomas. He's mastered the art of glaring at me until he gets treats.
Yeah, that's pretty direct eye contact right there.
Yeah, look at that. I would lose a staring contest with that cat every time. Anonymous, that is a great, great story. Yeah, if any of you have great anecdotes about talking to someone in your family or in your community and having them come around, I would love to hear about it because those kinds of conversations, those best practices, so many of us need to hear so we know what we can go and talk to our people in our community about.
100%. Thank you, AG, and thank you for that submission. Anna Marie, pronouns she and her. Dear Beans team, I start every day with the beans and have been a listener since the kitchen table days. I've written in to share good news a few times. Last spring, I wrote in with good news that I got my dream job teaching high school Spanish after years of being a sub.
Yep.
Well, just recently, I had a meeting with an unhappy parent. I remembered to listen first to their concerns before jumping in with mine. Yes, their child is a student who is a tricky one to deal with. And by the end of the meeting, we were both feeling heard and understood. Then I found myself saying, do you have any final thoughts before we go? It was a perfect way to end that meeting, and I have the Daily Beans to thank for that bit of inspiration. So I guess this is a shout out to the Daily Beans for all your positive influence. Thank you for your empathy, kindness, and humor. You helped me be a better teacher. For Pod Tax, here's a pic of me in my classroom, my happy place. I didn't realize how well my hair matched my room until I took this photo, LOL. Oh my goodness, it definitely matches. And you are lovely. And I am so glad that you have this conversation with the parent. Because listen, I have a degree in education. My sister has been a teacher for a very long time. And I imagine there are more stories about disconnected parents who walk in thinking they know exactly what's happening with their child in the classroom that they haven't been taking any interest in until there's a problem and they're going to tell you you're wrong and you have to sit there and listen and go, okay, I hear you. I'm with your child 12 hours a day in my classroom and that's what I want to talk about. But it sounds like you guys found level playing ground. At least we're able to meet somewhere in the middle and that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah. And boy, the hair does match, right? The lime green and the turquoise walls is exactly the same. That's so great. And yeah, you know, I've taken so many, having worked for the government and getting a PhD in public health, and there's a lot of leadership classes and how to have discussions and be an active listener. I've taken so many of these classes that just burns into me, you know, about the compliment sandwich, right? Like when you're going to give constructive criticism, or to ask anybody if they have any final thoughts before you exit a conversation. It's just so ingrained in me, Dana, from all of those healthcare leadership development program courses that I've taken over the years. But it actually does make a difference when you need to communicate effectively. So great submission. Thank you all so much for your input. Dana, I fly tomorrow. No, we're on tomorrow, but you're off on Friday, I believe.
Correct. I will be in flight to the East Coast on our Thursday, which will be everyone's listening on Friday, but I'll be back in yours tomorrow for sure.
Okay. Well, and do you have any final thoughts?
No, I do not. Thank you for asking.
Not today. All right, yeah. No, you're welcome. Can I offer you some feedback? Have you seen Wine Country? You need to see Wine Country if you have not seen Wine Country. Because first of all, Paula Pell is a gem.
Oh, yeah.
Her partner's in it too, and she's incredible. But
Wine Country, I feel like, was one of those movies that I thought was going to be really bad, and it wasn't.
It turned out to be awesome, yeah. Right? Yeah. I too fucked Devin. It's so funny. I guess they really did come with the house. Okay, everybody, your new assignment tonight, watch Wine Country. And then you'll know what I am talking about when I say, can I offer you some feedback? So no final thoughts from Dana. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health, take care of your family. Vote blue over Q.
And take everyone you know with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis' first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing in the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch." you will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.